not a Palestinian thing anymore. That the attacks and the silencing and the suppression in the media on what is happening right now is going to affect all of us. Whether you're Palestinian, whether you're American, whether you're Jewish, is going to affect you. And so it starts with really being informed, and not just being informed on the casualties and the numbers and everything, but just being informed on how our government is behaving over the past 2 years and how our government has supported a genocide. Those are the things that people need to learn. And then you can do something. You don't have to just read the article or see the post and not do anything. You can do every little thing count. It really does. The only thing that has kept this Palestinian solidarity movement going is the numbers. We are, this is a movement that's not funded. This is a movement that is grassroots on every level you can imagine. And if it wasn't for the numbers, if it wasn't for the people who have basically said, "I can't stand for this," and whether they donated $10 to a fund or whether they went on a protest or, in this case, attended a concert and stood in solidarity on an event, such as the one that we're putting together, all of these things make a difference. We just got to keep it sustainable, and we got to keep the message alive. And it's a message of needing peace, ending of the occupation, and basically equality for all. I think these are shared human values and American values.
All right. Hey, Sean, thank you so much for your time. So this event will be Friday, May 30th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, benefit concert for people of Gaza, music duo Sepharin, and comedian and activist Amer Zar. Sean, thank you so much, and have a wonderful day.
That was one of the organizers of the event taking place in Portland this Friday, May 30th at the First Unitarian Church. More information can be found at the Jewish-Palestinian Alliance of Oregon website, jpao.org. That's jpao.org. Thanks for joining us tonight on News in Depth here on KBOO Community Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Camp KBOO is now in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership drive now through June 29th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give, text KBOO to 44321, or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, and support a summer of memories together.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. This month's Development Committee meeting will be held on Wednesday, May 28th at 5:30 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting. It will be held at the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
We don't teach queer history in K through 12 or even in higher ed unless you're specifically looking for it.
Tanya DeZook of the University of North Texas.
A lot of stuff has been purposely deleted, where we have histories and archives that during various purges, we'll go with that, have been destroyed. So I know that is something that is actually a concern right now with our own geopolitical situation here in the U.S.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Queer Catholics waiting to see about Holy See, mass discharges of trans troops cleared by top U.S. court, and This Way Out's audio archives gets indexing facelift. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 10th, 2025. Most queer Catholic groups are greeting the Roman Church's new Pope, Leo XIV, with cautious optimism. The former Cardinal Robert Prevost has a questionable record on LGBTQ issues, so they're putting a lot of faith in Leo's first words as Pope. Peace be with you. We have to seek together to be a missionary church, a church that builds bridges and dialogue. There's not a lot to go on. Born in Chicago, he's the first U.S.-born pontiff in the church's history. He spent 2 decades as a bishop in Peru and is fluent in 5 languages. At 69, he's relatively young to begin a papacy. What little is known about Leo's position on LGBTQ people is disturbing. Where his predecessor, Pope Francis, famously said, "Who am I to judge?" Bishop Prevost denounced the entertainment industry at a gathering of bishops in 2012. He charged the media with harboring sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel, like the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children, according to a report in the New York Times. In Peru, Prevost spoke out against gender teachings in schools, telling local news, "The promotion of gender ideology is confusing because it seeks to create genders that don't exist." Nevertheless, the global network of Rainbow Catholics expressed hope that opinions and ideas can change. Likewise, Dignity USA's statement read in part, "We pray that Pope Leo XIV will demonstrate a willingness to listen and grow as he begins his new role as the leader of the global church." New Ways Ministry Executive Director Francis DiBernardo hopes that Leo will further educate himself by meeting with and listening to LGBTQ+ Catholics and their supporters. Outreach Catholic Executive Director Michael O'Loughlin is more optimistic. He told The Advocate, "From his choice of name honoring a pope committed to justice to his call for a church focused on peace and dialogue, early signs show that Pope Leo XIV hopes to continue the pastoral outreach of Pope Francis. While we do not yet know how the new pope will interact with LGBT Catholics, the same was true in 2013 on the night Pope Francis was elected, and his pontificate wound up being inspiring to so many in our community."
The U.S. Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration's wholesale discharge of transgender service members to go forward. Along ideological lines on May 6th, the 6-3 majority lifted the lower court's injunctions to let the policy be enforced even while its constitutionality is argued. There was strong dissent from the minority liberal justices Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, and Sonia Sotomayor. Trump's presidential Executive Order 14183 requires the discharge of all trans service members regardless of their honorable records. Future enlistments are forbidden. Demonstrably incompetent Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is its gleeful enforcer. In a speech at the Special Operations Forces Week 2025 in Tampa, Florida this week, the breadth of Hegseth's animus was on full display.
"We are leaving wokeness and weakness behind. No more pronouns, no more climate change obsession, no more emergency vaccine mandates, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that."
Hegseth's May 8th ultimatum to all transgender service members read, "In accordance with the policy now reinstated, service members who have a current diagnosis or history of or exhibit symptoms consistent with gender dysphoria may elect to separate voluntarily. There's a timeline here, and eventually involuntarily if necessary." The Secretary's specific directive explained the rules, ironically, going into effect as of Pride Month. The eligibility window to self-identify for voluntary separation is extended to June 6th, 2025 for active component service members and July 7th, 2025 for reserve component service members. After that, involuntary separation processes will begin for those who have not yet resigned. Transgender people in the U.S. Armed Services have been on a real roller coaster ride. Trump banned trans troops during his first administration, then President Joe Biden lifted it. Now, they're at least temporarily banned again. Second Lieutenant Nick Talbot of the U.S. Army Reserve is a lead plaintiff in one of the lawsuits challenging the trans military ban. He used his uniform as a symbol of his courageous stand during an interview with CNN.
I do remember kind of putting this on for the first time, and I was starting to think I was never going to get to wear this, and here I am. And especially now, you know, getting to be a lieutenant and getting to wear my rank, I worked really hard for this. I think that it's just absolutely ridiculous to insinuate that trans folks and trans service members are, you know, going home and trying to pretend to be something that we're not.
Colonel Bree Fram has spent more than two decades in the service, the last 4 years in the U.S. Space Force. She was defiant on Baltimore, Maryland TV station WJZ.
I know at my core what I stand for, and I believe in the ideals of America and the oath that I swore to defend. When that ruling came out, I and thousands of other transgender service members were doing the jobs and the missions that the military has assigned to us. I've served over 22 years in uniform, and if there's one thing I can guarantee, that whether it is in uniform or not, my time of service is not done.
Maine's Democratic Governor Janet Mills got the last laugh this week when the U.S. Department of Agriculture backed down from its threats to defund the state's school lunches program. Mills' confrontation with Donald Trump over her state's laws protecting transgender female athletes went viral in mid-February.
Is Maine here, the governor of Maine?
Huh? Yeah, I'm here.
Are you not going to comply with it?
I'm complying with state and federal laws.
We are the federal law. So you better comply, because otherwise you're not getting any federal funding.
See you in court.
Well, I did see him in court.
Governor Mills delivered the follow-up at a May 9 press conference.
And on May 2nd, just 1 month after the USDA's letter, the USDA has backed down and they have agreed to stop freezing funds for the school lunch program that feeds 172,000 kids in Maine. And it's good to feel a victory like this. We took him to court, and we won.
Finally, it was Shades of Stonewall at Pittsburgh's venerable P-Town Bar on May 2nd. More than a dozen members of the Pennsylvania State Police and other officers stormed the venue in the middle of another Party Pittsburgh drag show. The Raiders held off for a full-length rendition of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody before ordering patrons and performers out for half an hour while they conducted what they called a compliance check. The issue was apparently overcrowding. However, a statement from Mayor Ed Gainey verified that the bar had undergone renovations during the COVID lockdown and that the owners were waiting for an updated permit from the city. That revision would have accommodated the crowd size that night. Well-known trans model and performance artist Amanda Lepore was a guest performer. It was widely reported that some officers asked her to take a selfie with them as she waited outside with the other queens and patrons. Drag queen extraordinaire Indica was the evening's host. She led fellow performers and close to 100 patrons in an a cappella sing-along of Chapel Round's Pink Pony Club while waiting outside in the rain. As Kuberg commented, "Despite the interruption, the night became a moment of resistance, solidarity, and improvisational beauty. It reminded everyone there that drag isn't just entertainment, it's political. And when the music stops, the queens don't. They just take the stage wherever they need to, even if it's in the street."
That's News Wrap. global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 10th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Making history, and there's making history. First, the people and movements that change the course of events make history. Then historians make history out of whatever documentation is hopefully recorded at the time of those events and hopefully preserved. If that documentation vanishes, either by accident or by design, the work of future historians will be skewed. This Way Out has been recording LGBTQ events as they happen since 1988, and the complete collection of programs has now been archived online. That's only the beginning. Overnight Productions CEO and NewsWrap producer Brian DeShazer is the driving force behind the preservation project. He talks with one of his co-conspirators about the next steps to turn the collection into a useful research tool before the shifting political climate makes such resources disappear.
Hi, Tanya DeZook, and welcome to This Way Out.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So let's get talking about our This Way Out collection that has been preserved by the American Archives of Public Broadcasting, which is a collaboration between the Library of Congress and GBH. We've been working on this project for 5 years now, and thanks to the American Archives, they were digitized. And now the back end of that story is what to do with all the metadata cataloging and what is the future of an archive like this. So Tanya, tell me about how you became involved with the project and what you've accomplished.
I'm working on helping you with the back end database stuff. My intern, Kelsey, and I worked on confirming all of the metadata and the dates were all correct for all of the files and the transcriptions are done.
Can you explain a little bit more what that means? So we're working from an audio resource. AI generated a basic transcription of everything. And then what do we do with it?
So once we have the basic transcription of the tapes, we're taking a different AI set. The AI will scrub through the transcripts and find the locations that have been mentioned in all of the episodes. And their time codes when they're mentioned, and create a new data set for us. And that data set will allow us to have every location that's mentioned, particularly in the NewsWrap segment, but even in the longer form interviews and like news coverage, when a location has been mentioned. So eventually, all that metadata will be put into a table where we can then pull on a user graphic interface a map. And so eventually for the users, we will have a global map of every news mention in This Way Out, all of those locations. So you could click on a location on the map and it will pull up a list of all the episodes that mention that location in chronological order. So you can sort of see the history of queer events globally and listen to the reportage of those locations in chronological order. And that would be an amazing ability for researchers and students to be able to physically interface with the database in a way that is geospecific. And people can sort of get a history and scope of what This Way Out has covered over the years, because it's all over the world.
So as a researcher in the classroom, what does that mean in terms of what students in the future might use as a PhD, a grant project that they would be working on? What do you think it could do?
Well, it allows students to see global networks more clearly in terms of how what happens in one country or one region then affects or inspires other countries and regions. You can find support networks that are happening globally, as well as on a more local context. And in terms of like future grant writing, there's ways of then utilizing that for historical, but also for future planning, right? What was successful historically speaking, now that we can see it on a big picture, how can we replicate that to continue to move forward?
No, and also what's interesting, Tanya, is the very existence of queer history and its struggle to preserve it. You know, those human beings like us who can identify a collection, get it preserved, and put the energies to have it actually exist. But the future of the collection and the usability of the collection is impressing me. And when you talk about this global networking and being able to see it visually through the audio of This Way Out, what currently exists that can do that very thing? That is there a resource that somebody can ask and answer those questions on the global network other than what we're trying to present now?
I actually can't think of one. What are the problems that we have in terms of archival? Well, several problems that we have going on in archival is that each nation state sort of does their own archival system, and it's generally proprietary. And so it is rare to see an organization that covered news globally when it comes to queer LGBTQ plus issues. And so getting access to that data is difficult to then make a global network. So we do have national like archives and libraries, even here in the US, but they are generally geospecific. The other issue is that a lot of stuff has been purposely deleted, right? Where we have histories and archives that during various purges, we'll go with that, have been destroyed. So I know that is something that is actually a concern right now with our own geopolitical situation here in the US. And one of the reasons why going digital is so necessary. What is great about this project is that we have copies of this digital archive hosted in several locations in the hopes that if one gets shut down, the whole project remains.
So we also need to thank David Soibert at the University of California, Santa Barbara, who's taking the master tapes of the collection for permanent storage, but is also ingesting the digital collection for access. And you're going to be helping us making an interface to our website for yet another interface and a way for people to find us and do research in a different user way. Like each of those institutions has a particular way to do research of how their database is set up. But with This Way Out's website, we could make it our own and make it user-friendly as towards our audience rather than an academic researcher. The existence of our queer history and those purges that you talked about, we also have to talk about family purging personal histories because of shame. The vast amount of history, particularly through the AIDS crisis, is just gone. So what we do have in terms of This Way Out's history is incredible piece of evidence of our time through the AIDS crisis, which is still not over.
You are listening to Tanya D. Zook, who has a PhD in moving images and lectures at the University of North Texas College of Liberal Arts and Social Sciences in media industries and audiences. She is also the faculty advisor to the Queer Cinema Club on campus.
In terms of the Radio Preservation Task Force, like we got together in the Gender and Sexuality Caucus of a national collection of academics and scholars and researchers, but also archivists that are putting the stuff together. Now I'm wondering about, you know, those academics and the people that teach media studies and queer studies and feminist studies. How do you think that they'll be able to use this collection?
This is such a big question right now. I think one of the best things that we have going forward for this project is that it, because it is utilizing so many different resources and systems, that it will be available to the open public. I know right now in academia, pretty much everything that we study and that women, gender, sexuality section of things, and if we get intersectionality involved when it comes to race and ethnicity, all of that is verboten right now for funding. all of those words are stricken. So the fact that it is in fact open source and would be available to anybody is a huge thing for freedom of academic and scholarly pursuits. In terms of how we utilize the database and like the archive that is This Way Out, it allows us to see slice of life. It allows us to see the change of political movements. I can certainly see people going through and doing location bound, doing thematic research. So whether it's on the AIDS crisis, whether it's on changing legislation, which is constantly covered within This Way Out, or even my personal project that I want to do is looking at the response music from the wrap-up. Every wrap-up has that response music. I find that fascinating and would love to do a study there. It allows for that kind of coding to happen as we look through themes. And hopefully at some point we can also do other interfaces that go along themes as well. Once we have the database set up, there will be a lot of options for how we can then filter that data or provide filters for scholars.
That's really exciting. I also wanted to talk, we were talking about the transcripts, and now that the transcripts are up, the American Archive of Public Broadcasting has added the collection to what's called it their Fix It Plus site, which allows crowdsourcing to do the transcription correction. The dream of mine is for publication. So those researchers to come up with, you know, the evolution of the AIDS reporting, that does deserve to be in an academic book, you know, a scholarly book. Mm-hmm. As well as the entertainment interviews of who have we interviewed and why and who were they. And as you know, particularly queer history comes and goes. There are people still that come out every day that have not yet opened this up to what was Stonewall. So we still are teaching Stonewall every year during Pride Month because there are so many people that come out that haven't had access or interest into that history.
Well, and we don't teach queer history in K-12 or even in higher ed unless you're specifically looking for it.
It's going to get harder and harder and harder because now it's verboten.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't pass yet. It was up for curriculum review oversight, state oversight of curriculum, even in higher ed. And all of the DEI language was going to have to get shunted. And several of our classes were going to be closed. It didn't pass. We're very grateful. We're very thankful that they didn't pass. But it is something that is very much on our mind of like, how do we preserve or even teach these concepts or these histories without being censored? One of those ways is by presenting it as history and then sort of leaving the DEI out of it all.
Like, how about you personally, having listened to some of This Way Out, when you were introduced to This Way Out, what was your reaction?
To be honest, I was shocked that it had been around for so long. I was like 40 years old, and I had never heard a queer radio program. I grew up in a very rural area, in a very conservative household, and did not know that that content existed. Now, with the internet and online distribution, my niece has access to that, and she's 4 hours from the nearest city. And that is, to me, amazing that she can listen to This Way Out and have access to that history and to that community. It's something rare to have that connection, especially when we get cut off from family and from larger society, that there is these threads that still exist and can climb back. And see that we're not alone and we've never been alone. And so rarely do we see that in mainstream culture and in mainstream traditional education. As a teacher, as someone who that's what I do, I'm not as much of a researcher as I am an educator. Being able to provide links out to resources, particularly to my queer students, of which are particularly under attack right now here in Texas, and giving them that sense of history can be a lifesaver for a lot of these students. And so this project means a lot to me.
Well, thanks, Tanya. I really appreciate it. And I also want to shout out to Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle and the board of directors of this organization who produce and distribute this program for free to radio stations. So there is no money required for a radio station to air it from the very beginning. And with that, crossing over to the free access of the collection for researchers and, just as you said, for anybody who's able to find us on the internet or through their public radio station. We thank you for joining us, Tanya, and thank you for all the work that you've done. Tanya DeZook of the University of North Texas, we appreciate you. And we'll be talking more about the geographic transcription thingy. All right, Tanya, have a great day.
You too.
Thanks to Keith Brown and Gay Spirit Radio for lending us cassette copies of the collection for digitization. You can search This Way Out collection and listen to any of the 1,755 historic programs at AmericanArchive.org. For This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by John Dyer V and Tanya Kane Perry, and produced by Brian DeShazer, who was also this week's correspondent. The Stylistics and Billy Joel performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks James Kennedy of Dayton, Ohio, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KICI Iowa City, Iowa, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, WESU Middletown, Connecticut, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
I'm Mr. KBOO Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
This bill is actually an attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion, targeting LGBTQIA students and stripping away protections that help ensure our schools are safe and welcoming for all.
And now it's up to us to fight on all fronts against these continuing taps on public education and the millions of Texas kids who depend on it.
He has been sent to a very dangerous place where we fear for his safety.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Brazil's top court authorizes a gender-neutral ID for the first time. An anti-DEI bill threatens queer Texas students. And gay U.S. Congressman Garcia confronts Homeland Security's gnome about an abducted gay immigrant. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm Sarah Moncadieu.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 17, 2025. A non-binary Brazilian can identify as gender neutral on their official government documents thanks to a historic decision by the Superior Court of Justice. The unnamed applicant assigned female at birth had initially requested a male gender marker on their birth certificate after gender-affirming treatment. They later had second thoughts and appealed to the court to change to gender neutral. The ruling of the 5-judge panel was unanimous. Judge Nancy Andrighi spoke for them all, using female pronouns for the gender neutral applicant. Andrighi wrote, "This human being must be suffering greatly to undergo surgery, take hormones, become what she thought would be good for her, and then realize it was not the case." Brazil's Supreme Court unanimously removed the requirement that transgender people undergo surgery or hormone therapy before changing their legal gender in 2018. They could simply go to a government registry office without providing supporting medical or legal documents. In this new ruling, the judges of South America's largest country have allowed the designation of gender neutral on a person's government documents for the first time.
Political parties are banned from participating in the UK's largest LGBTQ Pride celebrations this year. The organisers of Pride in London, Birmingham Pride, Brighton Pride, and Manchester Pride cite the lack of sufficient support for transgender people by the ruling Labour Party, the Conservative Party, and the Lib Dems. The Greens are also apparently deemed not to be doing enough in the wake of last month's Supreme Court ruling that excludes transgender women from the legal definition of woman in the Equality Act. A joint statement from the Pride organisers said, "At a time when trans rights in the UK are under growing attack, our resolve has never been stronger. We will not allow progress to be undone. We will not stand by as the dignity, safety, and humanity of our trans siblings are debated, delayed, or denied." Some sources say that political parties will also be excluded by Pride organisers in Belfast and Southampton. Current Labour Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer, former Conservative leader Boris Johnson, Lib Dem leader Sir Ed Davey, and Green Party co-leader Carla Denner have all marched in Pride parades. Queer Party activists lament the ban and call for further dialogue. The Pride groups are calling for timely and dignified access to National Health Service gender-affirming care and a reformed accessible gender recognition certificate process to allow legal gender changes. They also demand sustainable funding for trans-led services and support organizations across the country. As they said in their joint statement, "This is the minimum. Anything less is not allyship, it's abandonment. To those in power, when you demonstrate true solidarity and tangible commitment to trans rights, we will stand with you. Until then, we will continue to speak truth to power and fight for a future where every trans person can live safely, freely, and proudly."
Mass discharges of transgender service members from the U.S. Armed Forces are underway. The Pentagon's May 14th order comes after the Supreme Court lifted the temporary injunctions that were blocking the process on May 6. No transgender person will be allowed to enlist while the constitutionality of the ban continues to be litigated in lower courts. Troops with diagnosis, history, or symptoms consistent with gender dysphoria who refuse to self-identify and do not voluntarily resign will be weeded out by screening medical records, according to an unnamed senior Defense Department official speaking to Stars and Stripes. Active duty service members have until June 6 to quit. Military departments must submit compliance reports by June 15. The Pentagon's memo also confirms that the Defense Department has reinstated its ban on gender-affirming health care for active duty trans troops. Trans troops who self-identify by the applicable deadline will get honorable discharges and begin the separation process within 30 days, as Stars and Stripes reports. They'll also get financial benefits based on rank, time in service, and whether they left service voluntarily or involuntarily. The anonymous Pentagon official explained to the military publication that an enlisted member at the fifth pay grade with 10 years of service would receive approximately $101,000 if they voluntarily separate. They'd get less than $51,000 if they are forced out. An officer at third pay grade with 7 years of service would receive about $125,000 if they voluntarily separate. They'd only get about $62,000 for an involuntary separation. Those voluntarily separating can also access some regular pre-separation services, including employment assistance, financial counseling, and community reintegration services. They would also be eligible for temporary health care coverage. Trans people in the reserves have until July 7th to voluntarily resign or face forced expulsion and the loss of separation benefits. Stars and Stripes says that there are about 4,200 service members who have been diagnosed with gender dysphoria, although the precise number of transgender service members is not really known.
Tennessee's transgender teachers and students can now be deadnamed and have their preferred pronouns ignored by school officials with no recourse. The new law specifically prohibits public schools and school districts from creating policies that penalize those who decline to use pronouns that are inconsistent with a person's biological sex or to use a person's preferred name without a legal name change. It also allows lawsuits to be filed against school officials who disregard the new legislation. Violators will be open to civil liability that could lead to injunctions and monetary compensation. The schools would also pay attorneys' fees. Republican Governor Bill Lee signed the law that sailed through both houses of the Republican-controlled state legislature. Democratic State Representative Justin Pearson was among several in his party to condemn the legislation, calling it the Bullying LGBTQ Students Act. Pearson is no stranger to strident arguments after his famed temporary removal from the legislature for opposing gun violence. He told NBC TV affiliate WBIR, "With all of the problems that we have as a state, whether that be dealing with poverty, the lack of health care access, the rights of women to choose what they do with their bodies, we're getting legislation after legislation that furthers discrimination, othering, and separation. It's despicable and ridiculous that this is how we are using our time and energy, and it isn't helping anybody."
Finally, Florida's ban on drag shows was struck down by the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on May 13th. The 2-1 majority found that the law's vague language, allegedly meant to protect children from salacious entertainment, violates free speech guarantees of the U.S. Constitution. Governor Ron DeSantis signed the law when he was running for president in 2023. It threatened fines, loss of operating licenses, and criminal penalties against a venue or performer for exposing a child to lewd performances, even with parental consent. Drag shows were not specifically mentioned. Instead, it prohibited minors from attending an adult live performance that depicts or simulates nudity, sexual conduct, sexual excitement, or specific sexual activities, including the lewd exposure of prosthetic or imitation genitals or breasts. There's nothing like that in the kind of family-friendly drag brunches that are wildly popular at the queer-friendly restaurant chain Hamburger Mary's. The Orlando location filed suit against the ban. The state appealed to the 11th Circuit after a lower court issued a preliminary injunction blocking its enforcement. Writing for the majority, Judge Robin S. Rosenbaum said, "By providing only vague guidance as to which performances it prohibits, the law wields a shotgun when the First Amendment allows a scalpel at most." The case now returns to the District Federal Court, where a bench trial can be scheduled. Hamburger Mary's has since closed its Orlando location, while the owners have continued to sponsor drag event community fundraisers. They plan to open a new restaurant in Kissimmee. Their victory statement said, in part, "This bill has nothing to do with children and everything to do with the continued oppression of the LGBTQ+ community. Anytime our legislators want to demonize a group, they say they are coming for your children. In this case, creating a false narrative that drag queens are grooming and recruiting your children with no factual basis or history to back up these accusations at all."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 17th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in your ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. But This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Joe Bainline. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Would you commit at least into looking and asking El Salvador if he is alive?
This is a question that's best asked to the president and the government of El Salvador.
Absolutely. And I think you know very well that you could ask that question.
The U.S. government refuses to give answers about a gay Venezuelan's whereabouts later in the program.
The stars at night.
The war against diversity, equity, and inclusion in education is sweeping the United States, and Texas is the scene of one of the most recent battles. This Way Out's Lucia Chappell reports.
Initially, the Texas legislature bill SB 12 is called Relating to Parental Rights in Public Education, to Certain School Requirements and Prohibitions Regarding Instruction and Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Duties, and to Student Clubs at Public Schools. Put another way, it would require parents to opt their children into rather than out of sex education. It would remove DEI considerations from hiring, curriculum, and staff training, and it would ban queer student groups. It's a follow-up to SB 17, which dismantled DEI in state colleges and universities in 2023. SB 12 passed the state Senate in March and is beginning its journey through the House. There, the measure came before the Committee on Public Education this week, and LGBTQ activists held a press conference to express their concerns. Representative Ron Reynolds is a Democrat from Missouri City who chairs the Legislative Black Caucus. He's one of the people leading the opposition to SB 12.
Today I stand before you not just as an elected official, but as a parent of two children that are actually in public schools. Our concern is for the quality of our public schools, for our children's safety and well-being. It has never been greater. We've seen attack after attack after attack on our public schools. We've seen attacks on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we saw this starting last session with Senate Bill 17, where we ended diversity, equity, and inclusion in colleges and universities. And now it's extended further to K-12, and it's a further attack on not just Black and Brown, but LGBTQ is anti-Muslim, is anti-immigrant. It passed this bill when undermined educators by giving parents complete control over their students' education and strip students of their personal autonomy and privacy, force school staff to out their students to their parents.
Equality Texas Communication Director Jonathan Gooch stressed the impact of DEI-related services on the lives of queer students.
SB 12 seeks to demolish DEI programs, restrict access to mental health services for young people, and to eliminate all conversation and education about LGBTQ issues. To some people, it might seem strange that we're concerned about parents monitoring which mental health services their young people, their students have access to. With LGBTQ students, it's not that simple. Young people who fear that their parents might not affirm them need access to mental health resources. That's a huge burden to carry. And professional counselors can help young people navigate that tension between wanting to respect their parents and wanting to remain a part of the religious tradition while also being true to what they know in their gut.
Mandy Garcia of the Texas branch of the American Federation of Teachers has been working to defeat similar legislation on the higher education front.
A higher ed bill that we've been working against, SB 37, is similar to SB 12 in that it is also a sweeping attempt to censor curriculum, censor our educators, and strip our students of access to quality education. These attacks are highly organized, but we're here to show lawmakers that so are we. Bills like SB 12 and SB 37 are both sweeping reforms of our education system, both K-12 and higher ed. In SB 37, there are false notions and claims that faculty senates are creeping their power over administration. In SB 12, they are granting parents this undue authority to report teachers, to report educators, to report school districts. And what we're seeing is that there are so many parallels in the language, in this violent language that we're seeing in SB 12 and SB 37. I mean, there's a very clear, unified attack against education on all fronts. And when we strip our educators of their autonomy, we disempower our students and their access to quality education.
Garcia's point was perfectly illustrated by a student who testified at the House committee hearing.
I know firsthand that diversity, equity, inclusion are not buzzwords or false realities. These are lenses in which many of us see ourselves in schools and curriculums, and there are things like that need to be done in Texas public schools because they give us the confidence to exist as individuals in our own self. SB 12 prohibited more woodworked schools from acknowledging the racial, cultural, and gender diversity that defines Texas. Or bad schools got taboos, simple days as discussing real systemic issues, or even the three teachers that are reflective of the communities that they serve. This bill sends a clear message to students like me, and our stories, our histories, our identities are not worth honoring in Texas public schools.
Our students deserve better.
Representative Reynolds.
Senate Bill 12 is just another Republican MAGA toolbox to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion practices in our schools. And so our message is a call to action for all people of good conscience to say enough is enough. Let's stop with the hyper-partisan politics. Let's stop playing political football with our precious students.
Reynolds has a realistic strategy for fighting SB 12 as it moves through the House calendars process that determines how a bill is handled. And he believes in taking action both inside and outside the legislature.
And so we hope that it will die in committees, assuming that it passes committee. Like, I'm going to be real and transparent that I believe it likely will. Our next step is to find ways that we can keep it from getting on the floor, soften it through amendment. And so our goal is not to give up. And that's why we're here today, is to call to action. We want the public to call the members of the Public Education Committee to tell them to vote no. We want people, if it soon passes the Public Education Committee, to call the Calendars Committee and tell them not to allow this bill out of calendar. So there are different hurdles. We're not even up. And that's why we have this press conference today, to say why we stand solidly against this bill. And the question should be for the bill authors and the supporters of it. Are you against diversity? Are you against equity? Or are you against inclusion? We need to ask that question. We shouldn't have to defend why this bill is bad. They should defend why is this even an issue. As my faith teaches me to love all. And that doesn't mean some. And we're not going back. So we're going to continue to fight. We're going to continue to speak truth to power. And we're going to continue to do everything we can to kill Senate Bill 12.
The House Public Education Committee heard witness testimony for about an hour on May 13th, and SB 12 was left pending. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Hi, my name is Billy Bean, and I was a Major League Baseball player from 1986 to 1995. I started with the Detroit Tigers. I played for the Los Angeles Dodgers and the San Diego Padres. I am gay, and you're listening to a show that hits it out of the park every week. This Way Out Radio Magazine.
Home is where the heart is, no matter how the heart lives. That's where you've got to make yourself at home.
A gay Congress member from California is demanding answers about a disappeared gay Venezuelan asylum seeker, and he's not intimidated by the Director of Homeland Security. This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle has news from the U.S. Capitol.
His mother just wants to know if he is alive.
Among the 200 or so Venezuelan men who have been illegally sent from the U.S. to the notorious Cicot prison in El Salvador is Andre Hernandez Romero. Andre is a gay makeup artist, not a gang member or a national security threat. Shortly after his disappearance, his story was told to Democracy Now! By Margaret Cargioli, directing attorney for policy and advocacy at Immigrant Defenders Law Center.
Our client is an asylum seeker who entered the United States via the U.S. southern border through the CBP One app over a year ago. He was detained in Southern California, was waiting for his right to have, you know, a judge hear his case as to asylum. He was flagged because he has tattoos. He's in the arts field. Solely because he has tattoos, the only evidence that the government at that point had submitted were pictures of what they attribute Tren de Agua, Aragua gang members to have, just one page of a few tattoos. And solely because of that, having no criminal record, he has been sent to a very dangerous place where we fear for his safety. And it's extremely concerning that the United States government is not sharing any information. We did not know his whereabouts from Friday until Monday when he had an immigration court hearing. At that hearing, it was the first time that the United States government actually confirmed that he was sent to El Salvador.
That was nearly 2 months ago, and still Andrea has not been heard from. In April, an unofficial delegation of Congress members went to El Salvador to try to contact the detainees. It was unofficial because their request was denied by the Republican-controlled House. Representative Robert Garcia was one of that group. He got another opportunity to demand answers about Andre when Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem appeared before the House Homeland Security Committee. With a portrait of Andre in front of a backdrop of green hills and purple flowers at his side, Garcia grilled Noem about the missing immigrant.
Now, Madam Secretary, you've heard this case today, but I have to speak about it one more time. I think it's really important. This is Andre Romero. He had an appointment to come to this country to claim asylum. We gave him that appointment. The United States government gave him his asylum appointment. He comes for his appointment. He passes a credible fear interview. He's a gentle person as described by his family. He's openly gay. He was leaving his country for persecution of being gay. He did everything right, claimed asylum, that was legal. And then we sent him to a dangerous prison at the border with no due process. There are claims about his tattoos. He has his parents' names on his tattoos and two crowns that relate to a festival back in his hometown. We are paying to lock this young gentleman up forever. What I would ask is the ambassador in El Salvador, we have asked for proof of life of Andre. He has had no access to lawyers or family since he has been taken over a month now. No one knows if he's even alive. His mother just wants to know if he is alive. So my ask to you, Madam Secretary, is the same that I asked the ambassador. Can we do a proof of life check on Andre just to see if he is alive?
Congressman, we are utilizing the tools that Congress has given us to apply due process to individuals. We are doing that for every person, and we are making sure that we're following you have given us as far as guidance and how things should be implemented.
Would you commit to just letting his mother know, as a mother to mother, if Andre is alive? He was given an asylum appointment by the United States government. We gave him an appointment. We said, Andre, come to the border at this time to claim asylum. He was taken to a foreign prison in El Salvador. His mother just wants to know if he is alive. Can we check and do a wellness check on him?
Our asylum applications are different than the granting of asylum. And I don't know the specifics of this individual case. This individual is in El Salvador, and the appeal would be best made to the president and to the government of El Salvador on this.
This is not under
my jurisdiction.
Madam Secretary, you have said that CECOT in El Salvador is one of the tools in the toolbox that you have. You have said that and have been quoted as saying that. You and the president have the ability to check if Andrew is alive and if not being harmed. Would you commit at least into looking and asking El Salvador if he is alive?
This is a question that's best asked to the president and the government of El Salvador.
Absolutely. And I think you know very well that you could ask that question. What you are choosing to do, Madam Secretary, is disregard this young man's life, this young man's family, who was given an appointment by the United States. I think it is shameful that you won't even request to see if this young man is alive. His family has no idea, has no access to lawyers. I would hope that we would have the humanity to just check if this young man is okay. With that, I yield back. It's shameful.
That was Representative Robert Garcia questioning Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem during a House Homeland Security Committee hearing. Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Joe Badeline and Sarah Montague, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Lucia Chappell. Electric White Orchestra performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Dyer V of Winston, Oregon, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on 2NCR South Lismore, New South Wales, WUML, Lowell, Massachusetts, KFGM, Missoula, Montana, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
You are listening to KB.